Srimad Bhagavatam, third canto, chapter 23. Text 55. Translation. Association for sense gratification is certainly the path of bondage. But the same type of association performed with a saintly person leads to the path of liberation, even if performed without knowledge. Purport. The association of a saintly person in any way bears the same result. For example, Lord Krishna met many kinds of living entities, and some treated him as an enemy, and some treated him as an agent for sense gratification. It is generally said that the gopis were attached to Krishna for sense attractions, and yet they became first-class devotees of the Lord. Kamsa, Shishupal, Dantavakra, and other demons, however, were related to Krishna as enemies. But whether they associated with Krishna as enemies or for sense gratification, out of fear or as pure devotees, they all got liberation. That is the result of association with the Lord. Even if one does not understand who he is, the results have the same efficacy. Association with a great saintly person also results in liberation. Just as whether one goes toward fire knowingly or unknowingly, the fire will make one warm. Devahuti expressed her gratefulness, for although she wanted to associate with Kardama Muni only for sense gratification, because he was spiritually great, she was sure to be liberated by his benediction. Om Jnana Chimadantasya Jnananjana Chakshurmilitamyaya Chandranay Sri Jirai Namaha
Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Chaitanya Mahaprabhu Sahasrara Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
So in the beginning of the festival, we spoke about the theme, which is the miracle of associating with devotees. By association, you become what you are. The common saying in material parlance is, judge a man, judge a woman by the company he or she keeps. That's the easiest way to tell where someone is at and where someone is going. Regardless of their beliefs, regardless of their theories, regardless of their conceptions, just look at who's around them and you know what's going on. That is true in terms of material existence, and it's also true in terms of spiritual existence. So, this verse is telling us that if you want the path of bondage, then you associate with those who are attached to trying to enjoy this temporary flickering material world. That will get the job done. Don't worry. You don't have to meditate on it. You don't have to scratch your head. If you want to remain embedded in the cycle of repeated birth and death, you want to remain in nowhere land, then just associate with those who are committed to that type of existence, as we saw in the video clip prepared by Thakur Saranga and Sukanti Radha. We saw the determination, this is it. The fixity of purpose in terms of simply absorbing themselves in what is easily available to non-humans, animal forms alike. Then this verse is telling us that actually you can take that same principle of association, perform it with saintly persons, and you begin to make progress out of material existence. So association is the crucial factor. And we are further informed by this verse that even if you associate with saintly persons without knowledge, you're benefited. somehow or other. There may not be any formal delivery of transcendental knowledge, but still there's benefit just by, so to speak, rubbing shoulders, being around a saintly person. Of course, the real purpose of association with a saintly person is to hear transcendental knowledge. Now, what is transcendental knowledge? Is it just anything that seems to be spiritual in its own way? No, transcendental knowledge is a very precise term. It refers to authorized knowledge as spoken in the Vedic texts. It's not that I can make up transcendental knowledge, you can make up transcendental knowledge. No, then it's not transcendental. Transcendental knowledge means that which comes from beyond the range of mind, intelligence, and senses. And what is the proof that the knowledge comes from beyond the range of the body, mind, intelligence, senses? The proof is that by applying that knowledge, you will become transcendental. You'll become beyond material existence. That is the laboratory proof. That's why in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, by hearing and applying this knowledge, you will attain a transcendental nature just like his own, just like Krishna's. Because originally, qualitatively, we are as good as Krishna. We cannot ever compare in quantity, of course, but we are of the same quality. Just like the sparks of fire are of the same quality as the fire. But because our sparks have landed in the material atmosphere, so to speak, our original fiery quality has become practically extinct, unknown to us. Our own self is lost to us. This is how bewildered we are. Even unknowingly, even if your purpose in being around a saintly person is not to get transcendental knowledge, you'll still become effective in some way. Unknowingly, you'll perform activities that will benefit you in the future just by giving a little help, just by being courteous. And of course, unknowingly, you can make offenses. Yesterday we heard a nice example. Who is one of the young men who's here? He was describing how he was in an alleyway below the Bhakti Lounge in Wellington. And he didn't know that was the Bhakti Lounge. And he was just in the alleyway down below drinking with his friends. Who is that? And so then, yeah, from up above, you know, Gorarti opens the window and, you know, hollers down to them and tells them something, you know. Gave them some uplifting words. And then one of his friends started, you know, deriding the whole situation. What is this Hare Krishna stuff? But then, our friend here, he knew nothing, but he just started defending. He started to defend the Bhakti Yogis. He didn't even know anything about them. He's just down in an alleyway drinking with his friends under the window. So one, with materially addicted friends, was cursing and laughing. Who wants to hear this stuff? But he started defending and he knew nothing. And then we heard how the devotee just dropped a flyer down from the window that way down below to the alleyway, you know, inviting, you know, them to come to the Krishna Fest on Sunday. And he shows up. Now he's here. So 1 minute, you know, he's drinking with his friends in the alleyway. From up on high, you know, the window opens, you know. Down comes a flyer. His friends curse. this disturbance to our drunken happiness. And he defends, he does nothing but something, super soul in his heart. Gave him the chance. Here's your chance to do some service. Defend. Now he's here. So that's a great graphic example of how, even if without knowledge, you associate with devotees, there'll be some benefit. So, how are we going to create a society of devotees that will inspire people? That is always our quest. It's a never-ending quest. How to create a vibrant community of bhakti yoga practitioners so that people can associate with such practitioners and be inspired. Unless they have that chance to associate with inspiring practitioners, they're going to go nowhere. When you look at society today, what you see is a situation which everyone has lost sight of what is the real goal in life. They are pursuing economics as the all in all. Now, in Vedic social philosophy, economic development is there, but it's subordinate to Dharma. The Vedic texts give information, even how to live a prosperous material life, because not everyone immediately is a transcendentalist. So therefore, the Vedic texts give information how you can have a prosperous material life in such a way that gradually, maybe over several births, you'll be elevated to the point where you can take up bhakti. So the normal pattern, as you know from reading the books, is dharma, artha, kama, moksha. First, there are religious principles. Then there's economic activity. So all the economic activity goes on based on this foundation of dharma. So dharma, artha, first proper religious principles, then economic affairs, and then it can be kama, sense gratification, but not wild dog-like sense gratification, which is considered the standard these days. Regulated so that one makes progress, one becomes purified. And then, according to the normal Vedic sequence for material civilization, after religion, economic development, sense gratification, if you've properly executed your sense gratification, what is the result? You get frustrated. What's the point of all that? And then you start thinking of moksha, liberation. I need to get out of material existence. Of course, if you have not properly engaged in kama, sense gratification, then the result is you just think, I need more sense gratification. But if you've actually followed dharma, the result is you get over it. And then you start thinking of moksha, liberation. Now, where does bhakti come in? Actually, bhakti is beyond dharma, artha, kama, moksha. Lord Chaitanya, Krishna himself, has stated, prema, pumata, mahan. Love of Krishna is the fifth category. It actually has nothing to do with dharma, artha, kama, moksha. It's got nothing to do with material prosperity. But most people start out being embedded in material existence, and therefore the Vedic texts offer knowledge of how to have a progressive material human civilization. You see, bhakti is actually far beyond moksha. We'll talk about that more later. Liberation is considered a trivial tribute to bhakti yogis. The example given by Bhava Mangala Thakura, Mukti Swayam Mukti Panjali Sevate Swam. He's doing his bhakti practice and liberation personified is knocking on the door. Aren't you interested? Freedom from material existence. Please don't bother. I'm too busy serving Krishna. Because service to Krishna is actually, at the very least, liberation. That's why Lord Chaitanya says, Mama Janmini Janmini Isvare Bhavata Bhaktir Hoitukitvai. I don't mind taking birth after birth in the material world as long as I have devotional service. When you have devotional service, you're actually in the spiritual world. Those who know the art, science, and culture of maximum absorption in devotional service, they can taste, I'm already in the spiritual world. It doesn't matter whether I take birth after birth. It's the devotional service, the bhakti, that defines my location. My location is not defined geographically or physically. It's all about the service. So we do not overlook economic progress. We just keep it in its place. For a proper human society, economic development should be firmly hitched to Dharma. And you don't see that now. Therefore, everything is so crazy. Everything is so upside down. Boom and bust. And everyone's always watching the polls. What is the business confidence this month? How are people thinking the economy will do? That's the number one concern. That is not a real human civilization. A real human civilization puts economic development in its place. For bhakti practitioners, they are advised minimize as much as possible their economic affairs so that they save time for what is most important, their spiritual development. The only way that you're going to see a change in materialistic society is if people have a chance to associate with enlivening the devotees. Then they start to perceive there's something else. We want to give them that chance. And of course, that means we have to upgrade ourselves. Spiritual life is progressive. You're dealing with Krishna, so you want to make progress in deepening your relationship. And that relationship is deepened through service. Actually, you can't approach Krishna directly. Krishna is the property of his devotees. So therefore, if you're going to serve Krishna, you must have the society of devotees. Because Krishna says that his devotees are more dear to him than his very self. If you don't associate with the devotees, you must associate with someone, and you'll be associating with those who will give you further addiction to material existence. You'll engage in talks that seem to present a material solution. That's a sign of material attachment. You'll engage in conversations all about possible material solutions to material problems. You'll go on and on and on, and basically you'll just get drier and drier. Your tongue will become more and more like a desert. And of course, there will never be any solution. You can talk about those things, but the solution will never happen. There is a gradual Vedic path that's mentioned in the Shastra. But it is also stated that because in the age of Kali, things are so degraded, people don't have a lifespan or the mental concentration for the long, winding, gradual progress. So therefore, Krishna comes as Lord Chaitanya and gives you the motorway. Direct. Because your life is so short. It's amazing how people make such a big thing about it. A lifespan of 75, 80 years. From the Vedic perspective, that's considered just an eye blink. But we become so accustomed to such short span of time. And not only is your life short, but there's so much agitation going on all the time. You're surrounded by agitation. So in those circumstances, we have an emergency. And therefore, in these emergency circumstances, in which there is no time and no peace to sustain a very gradual approach, Krishna comes as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and he says, all right, this is the worst of times, so I'll make bhakti, the approach to bhakti, the easiest in these most difficult times. Just chant Hare Krishna in association with devotees. Engage in Krishna's service in association with devotees. It is very difficult to understand Krishna, especially in this Kali Yuga. But if you approach Krishna through Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, you can easily understand Krishna. Sometimes people wonder, why is Krishna so misunderstood? Krishna even states in Bhagavad Gita that there's a problem in perceiving him. They think he's impersonal. They think at first he was impersonal, then he became impersonal. They think he's an ordinary person. To properly understand Krishna can only be done in the association of devotees. Then everything springs to life. So let us consider how we can upgrade our community of devotees. This is a never-ending process. So that people can see another way to live. So people can see that there is another way to live that is based on authorized knowledge. But that authorized knowledge needs practitioners to bring it to life. So you can do that service for Krishna. So you'll always see that we're trying to stimulate the community of practitioners to go higher and higher. This is not just one person's job. Just like Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu states in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, he presents himself in an allegorical way as a gardener who is tending the tree of bhakti. He says, actually, I'm both the gardener and the tree. And I want that the fruits of this tree are distributed everywhere. But help is required. Actually, the Supreme Personality of Godhead can do anything, but he so kindly leaves us service to do. So Lord Chaitanya, speaking allegorically about himself as a gardener of the tree of bhakti, and he's also the tree, said, how many fruits can I distribute alone, by myself? I ask for everyone to please help me to distribute these fruits everywhere. Bhakti is dynamic. It's not just static, like some kind of religious belief. Okay, are you a believer? All right, the job is done. Can you recite a creed? Can you recite a few shlokas? Okay, your job is done. No. Love is the most dynamic and progressive thing in existence. So understand what is real love, that requires a lot of training, purification, and knowledge. So in this verse, the Bhagavatam is alerting us. You will go where your association takes you. Everyone should remember that firm principle. Because sometimes you may think, what does it matter who my association is? Everything matters about your association. Like parents who raise their children carefully are very concerned, who is my child associating with? Because they know that children will become molded by those influences. Similarly, in our budding attempts to serve Krishna, we should be watching what kind of association we have. Because that's what we're going to become like. That will be the influence we take on board. Now, in the purport, it's also said that any way you associate with Krishna, you benefit, even as his enemy. In the seventh canto of Bhagavatam, it is stated, kama, dvesha, bhaya, krodha. Whether you approach Krishna out of lust, kama, dvesha, envy, bhaya, fear, krodha, anger, doesn't matter, you'll benefit. Any way you come in contact with Krishna, you'll get liberation. So you might say, well then, what does it matter that I should try to develop a favorable attitude of loving devotional service since you all get the same result? Whether you are envious of Krishna, you fear Krishna, or you lusting for Krishna, it's all the same. So what's all this effort to try to refine our loving attitude to Krishna and make it pure? Generally speaking, it's all the same because liberation is also contained within Krishna. So the demons who are killed by Krishna, they are liberated into Krishna's impersonal manifestation. But what does a bhakti yogi think about that? If you temporarily lose your identity, how are you going to love? How are you going to serve? So therefore, for a bhakti yogi, liberation is hell. Because you can't love, you can't serve. You've temporarily obliterated your identity. You're so weary of having an identity in material existence that you think perfection means to have no identity. But Krishna is inviting you. You have an identity eternally, as stated in the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Never was there a time when you didn't have an identity. Never will there be a time. The same for you and for me, Krishna says. Our identity is eternal. So the whole point of bhakti is to revive your genuine identity as servant of Krishna. So who wants to abandon their identity? Because it's impossible to love them. We want to discover our real identity. So therefore, for a bhakti yogi, liberation, near freedom from material existence, is considered insignificant. It's not a goal. The love of Krishna is so inconceivably powerful that when you get it, you don't care whether you're in material existence or spiritual existence. Because actually, as long as you have devotional service, you are in spiritual existence, no matter where you are located. In this particular section of Bhagavatam, Devahuti, she's speaking to her husband, Kardama Muni, about what she would like from him. She's basically saying that, I didn't know your full spiritual glories. I thought you were just my husband. But anyway, because I'm attached to you as my husband, even though I didn't know your full spiritual glories, that attachment will still give me benefit. I didn't know, but still, I was attached to the right person. So now, please let the benefits flow. Please give me transcendental knowledge. She'll say, I only loved you as a woman loves her husband. But still, I should benefit because I was attached to a saintly person. So now let there be transcendental knowledge. I wasted my time with you for so many years being materially attached. But at least I was attached to the right person. So now let the real benefit of the attachment flow. If you're considering what will be the solution to the current social problems of the day, a solution will only happen when people have a chance to associate with enlivening devotees. And then they can see another vision for themselves and for society. Otherwise, they can't solve these problems on the material platform. It's like you're being caught in the whirlpool of the material energy. No matter how you thrash about, you're just whirling around. All right, you can have big conferences and debates. Let's whirl this way. No, let's whirl that way. But you're just all, no matter which way you whirl, you're in the whirlpool. Let's listen to this kind of music while we're whirling. No, let's listen to that kind of music. All the variegatedness, the so-called variegatedness, actually is meaningless because all you are doing is whirling around in a whirlpool. So you need the association of those who can get you out of the whirlpool. And to present that kind of association to the world takes a lot of work. And that's what we're trying to do here. We don't expect that everyone will stick to their proper behavior. It'd be nice, but now this is the material world. It's a battle with the illusory energy, and there will be casualties. That's basic fact of life. In stark terms, when one decides to serve Krishna, you are basically declaring war on the illusory energy. And in that kind of battle, there are casualties. You don't have to be a casualty, though, especially if you're very careful about your association and learn how to associate with Krishna's devotees. I've explained before, but it's always worth repeating, association with devotees is not a material social skill. It's not about who has the gift of the gab. It's not about who knows witty things to say. We all know persons like that. And you may have admired them. Oh, I wish I could socialize like that person. That person's the life of the party. That person always knows the right thing to say. In material existence, you'll find that those kind of persons are often the most lonely. And they shock you when they tell you, actually, I'm very lonely. Wow, I thought you were so vivacious and so outgoing in the life of the party, and you're lonely. So don't mistake the skill of associating with devotees to be based on social habits. No. To be able to associate with devotees properly is a divine skill. Krishna has to empower you. You have to ask Krishna for that ability. It's not a material skill. It's something any bhakti yoga practitioner can have and can increase by asking Krishna for it. During and before and after any interaction with a bhakti yogi, you can just pray to Krishna in the heart. Please allow me to interact with this. With your devotee properly. Please allow me to benefit from this devotee, from your devotee's association. And Krishna will help you. Because it's natural that sometimes you're going to take the association of Krishna's devotees for granted. You see these same persons for years, and naturally familiarity may bring about contempt. That's why the Shastra says, in reference to the deity and the spiritual master, neophytes aren't recommended to come so close, because they start taking things for granted. They start becoming very familiar. But if you always have that attitude of depending on Krishna for the ability to properly associate with devotees, then you'll be safe from this familiarity breeding contempt. Yes, sometimes Krishna's devotees, they make mistakes. But you have to remember, in materialistic association, everything is a mistake. So you take your pick. Everything is a mistake, and all those mistakes are for no gain, no purpose. In the association of devotees, yes, sometimes Christian practitioners, because they're not fully advanced, do not fully develop, they make mistakes. Sometimes they even can do themselves in and halt their spiritual progress for some time, maybe even the rest of this lifetime. But still, whatever devotional service they've done will be their eternal asset. They'll start again. If not in this life, they'll start in the next life from that very point they left off. So, newcomers sometimes have to be realistic and not utopian. The bhakti community is a hospital. And in a hospital, there are good patients, so-so patients, and not big patients. In that some follow the doctor's orders very strictly, some so-so, and some not at all. The purpose of a hospital is to cure people. So the first purpose of the bhakti yoga community is to cure the materialistic fever. You know that example about the rich lady and her maidservant, and they both were feeling ill, So the rich lady called the doctor, and the doctor took both their temperatures. And the rich lady had a temperature of 98, and then her maidservant had a temperature of 104. So the doctor said to the rich lady, actually, you're all right. You don't need any treatment. It's your maidservant. She needs all the care. So the rich lady protested, wait a minute, how can my maidservant have a higher temperature than me when I'm the proprietor, I'm the rich lady? I should have the highest temperature. My servant should have a lower temperature, because she's the servant. So you might say, oh, this is ridiculous. But that is the situation with material life. People are basing their judgments on who has the highest material fever. That's a successful person. That's a respectable person these days. Oh, your materialistic fever is soaring. That's so great. Oh, your materialistic fever is very low. You're not in the real world. You've been chatting Hare Krishna too much. That's the problem with those Hare Krishnas. All they do is chant Hare Krishna. We'd like to fulfill that criticism. That'll be the perfection of life. Yes, all we do is chant Hare Krishna. When will that day be ours? I hope you understand this point, that any contact with Krishna produces benefit. So therefore, whether you approach Krishna in this way or that way, you'll always benefit. But to get the benefit that a pure lover of Krishna gets, that is special. In general, you can say you get the same result. You get liberation. But the goal of bhakti is far beyond the tree. You also heard that it is generally said that the gopis were attached to Krishna for sense attractions, and yet they became first-class devotees of the Lord. It appears that way from one angle, but actually Krishna's dearmost consorts only dealt with Krishna for his pleasure 100%. It appeared that they were serving Krishna, they were loving Krishna for their own pleasure, but actually there was not one drop of selfishness in their dealings with Krishna. They never thought of their own happiness, they only thought of Krishna's happiness. But from the external point of view, it looks like they are lusting for Krishna. But in Chaitanya Charitamrita, it is explained the difference between lust and love. Lust means to desire to please your own senses. Love means the desire to wholly please the senses of the beloved. So that is the situation with Krishna's dearmost devotees, the rupis. They never dealt with Krishna in any way for their own aggrandizement, for their own benefit. This is inconceivable to us. That's why Lord Chaitanya states, Ramya kachit upasana vraja vadu bhagene kalpita. There's no better way of loving Krishna than demonstrated by his intimate devotees. They had no conception of their own happiness. Everything was simply Krishna's happiness. So their destination, their achievement, cannot be compared to that attained by enemies killed by Krishna. But if you just speak from a general, overall point of view, you can say they all benefit, and that is true. But then when you dig down deeper, you find that there are, on the transcendental platform, there are big differences. What about Kubja, Tribhagra? That's a tricky one. You know, she was a young hunchback girl in Mathura. And when Krishna and Balaram, the cowherd boys, entered Mathura, they requested various services from persons they met on the road. And Kubja, Tribhagra, was one of them. She was a hunchback young girl. And so Krishna joked with her, "Oh, most beautiful, well-formed lady. I see you're carrying some sandalwood paste." She was carrying for the king, for Kamsa. And Krishna said, "Actually, you should give Balaram and I the sandalwood paste." And the simple-hearted, hunchback, deformed young girl, she immediately began smearing the sandalwood paste on the transcendental bodies of Krishna and Balaram. And Krishna decided to immediately reciprocate with her service. So, in a very special way, he took his two lotus feet and pressed down on her feet with his feet, and then put his hands under her jaw. So while pressing down with his feet on her feet and pressing up with his hands under her jaw, he straightened her out. And not only did her back become straight, but she became transformed into a stunningly beautiful young girl. Naturally, she was feeling indebted to Krishna, and also looking at Krishna, the reservoir of all beauty, in her own simple, unknowledgeable way, she was becoming attracted. And she began to flirt with Krishna. Now this is all going on in the middle of the road in Mathura. You know, Krishna's there with his cowherd boyfriends. You know, Krishna's around 11 or 12 years old. So she's making, you know, those eye movements. You know, he's not how to do it. of eye movements to let the man know, you know, light's green. Probably things aren't even that subtle these days, huh? So anyway, she was looking like that at Krishna. Now she was a beautiful young girl. And simultaneously, she was grabbing at Krishna's cloth. But Krishna was a little embarrassed. And she invited him, please come to my home. She wanted to reciprocate with him. Please come to my home. You know, she's a simple young girl. That's all she could think of. You've done so much for me, and you are so beautiful. Come to my home. And you know how Krishna handled the situation. He acknowledged her attraction for him. Because Krishna always encourages his devotees. So he acknowledged that. And he spoke to her that certainly a girlfriend like you is very suitable for relieving the anxieties of us traveling boys far from home. Certainly had that ability to relieve our anxieties. But he was speaking to her while not looking at her. He's looking at his coward boyfriend. In other words, showing he's totally detached. And so, as he continued looking away at his coward boyfriend, not looking at her, he said, certainly, I will come to your house, but not now. That time did come when Krishna went to her house. Krishna had just heard from Uddhava, who had returned from Vrindavan. You know, Krishna sent Uddhava as a messenger to Vrindavan because he was concerned about how the devotees in Vrindavan were suffering in separation. Now that suffering in separation, you can mistake as a material affliction. And from a material point of view, it sounds so excruciating, but actually it is the highest spiritual pleasure. Love of Krishna and separation. In which the devotee is always pining for Krishna. As Lord Chaitanya says, Govinda Virahename. In the absence of Govinda, in the absence of Krishna, a moment seems like countless years. The whole world, shunyayatam jagatsarvam, the whole world seems vacant. What? Vacant? There's so much activity going on. No. It all is totally empty without Krishna's presence. So Krishna sent Uddhava to Vrindavan to deliver a message to the residents there. And also he wanted Uddhava to study the situation in Vrindavan, learn what is the highest standard of pure love. Because Krishna had it in his mind that Uddhava was a special person, that when he would go to Vrindavan to study the pure love there, and then return to Mathura to give his report, the residents of Mathura would accept, they would listen to Uddhava, that their love of Krishna, which was tinged by opulence, awe and reverence, couldn't compare to the residents of Vrindavan. So Krishna wanted that they know that. And so he sent Uddhava, knowing that when he returned, when Uddhava returned, the residents of Mathura would accept Uddhava's conclusion that there's nothing that compares to the love of Krishna as felt by the residents of Vrindavan, because it was spontaneous, without any trace of opulence, without any trace of thinking we love Krishna because he's the Supreme Personality Godhead. It was pure. It is pure, 100% spontaneous love, simply because Krishna is all attractive. He's the heart of hearts. So Uddhava came back and gave his report to Krishna, even though Krishna knows everything. But Krishna likes to engage in these situations with his devotees. Interaction with devotees is worth more to Krishna than knowing everything. So sometimes Krishna acts like he doesn't know everything. Please go to Vrindavan. Study the situation. Come back. Tell me what's going on. He knows everything, but knowing everything isn't the highest thing. Love is the highest thing. Certainly Krishna knows that. Therefore, he had Uva do that task. After he heard Uddhava's report, Krishna then allowed Uddhava to see that he was actually in Vrindavan in his expansion. It's called the Bhava expansion. In the hearts of the residents of Vrindavan, Krishna was there giving them succor and solace. And he allowed Uddhava to see that. So Uddhava would also not be in anxiety what's going to happen to the residents of Vrindavan. Krishna let him see how Krishna is actually always in Vrindavan and never leaves. Therefore, the acharyas point out that Krishna never, the original Krishna, Supreme Personality of Godhead, never takes a step outside Vrindavan. That Krishna who leaves Vrindavan is Yadu Kumar Krishna. It's an expansion of Krishna, but the original Krishna always stays in Vrindavan, engaging in loving affairs with his devotees. Sometimes those loving affairs, those pastimes are manifest, and sometimes not, to ordinary vision. So, Krishna showed Uddhava, I'm taking care of the situation. I'm in their hearts, manifesting my presence. But then, Krishna was thinking, there's this young girl devotee, Kubja, Trivikra. I know she's afflicted by material lust. She's a simple girl. She has no transcendental knowledge. She's not advanced. She's having problems with material lust. I'll go to her house now. So Krishna took Uddhava along with him. We'll explain why later. So they arrive at her house. And as you know, she had been transformed into a beautiful girl. And so her house was very beautiful. And it was decorated in such a way as to incite the passions of any male visitors. Pictures on the walls, fragrances in the air. And Shastra describes that she even had on hand aphrodisiacs. Incense burning, everything in the atmosphere was geared towards executing lusty desires. So I said, what's Krishna doing there? But Krishna is the source of everything. The material world emanates from Krishna, but it doesn't disturb him. Maya is Krishna's energy. It doesn't bother Krishna. So Krishna entered her house, and there was Trivikra, Kubja, in the company of many of her girlfriends. The ladies always like to have lots of girlfriends around to discuss things endlessly with. So, Trivikra was like that. I was discussing this point with my god sister, Vishaka, and she told me, yeah, it's, we're like cows. We have to digest everything with seven stomachs. We have to discuss things endlessly amongst ourselves. Whereas men, they digest with one stomach. You know, they chew something over and swallow it in one stomach. But the ladies, you know, they're cows. Those cows have seven stomachs. We just got to chew it and chew it and chew it this way, that way. What do you think? No, what do you think? Oh, really? Anyway, it's a difference in species. So, Trivikra, Kubja, she had her whole group of girlfriends. And so when Krishna and Uddhava arrived, Kubja led her girlfriends in greeting Krishna. And she offered Krishna a seat. And she also offered Uddhava a seat. But Uddhava, keeping in mind that, you know, he is the servant, he's not on the same level as his supreme personality. Uddhava just respectfully touched the seat with his hand. I accept, but I'm not going to sit there, because how can I sit on the same level as Krishna? So, after some introductory formalities, Krishna, who is the supreme Cupid, he didn't waste any time. He cut right to the chase. He just walked into Tribhakara's inner chambers and just reclined on the bed there. So you might go, ooh, my goodness. The supreme personality of Godhead? Well, this is something we would like to do, but how can God do this? How can you do that? You're part of the Supreme. The reason why you have those propensities is because you're part of Krishna. Krishna has those propensities in perfection without a drop of material contamination. Krishna doesn't have a material body. But when we try to imitate Krishna with our material bodies, what happens? And just for that privilege of imitating Krishna, we have to work so hard. Just to be an imitation, just to be a fake. But in Krishna's pastimes, you see the real thing. In purity, in perfection. So after some short formalities in the living room, Krishna just walks into her inner chambers and just reclines on the bed like he also likes. Everything is Krishna's problem. You might be thinking, what is this? Tripakra, Kumja is Krishna's property. All living entities are Krishna's property. So why are you saying, what is Krishna doing? He can't do that. Everything is his energy. We're the ones who can't do that. We don't say that. We should do that and Krishna shouldn't. With our material bodies, with our material imperfections, we should be doing all that. But Krishna, with his perfection, should do nothing. He's actually formless. He's qualityless. He's activityless. Yes, that is the Supreme Absolute Truth. And for us, yes, we have all the pastimes. This is our envy. That's why Mayavad is referred to as envy. Reduce Krishna to nothing. Saying he's impersonal is as good as reducing him to nothing. Of course, Krishna does have a material. Krishna does have an impersonal manifestation, but it's subordinate to his personality, as he points out in Bhagavad Gita. So clear. Brahmano hi pratishtaham. The impersonal Brahman is based on me. Now, how are you going to distort that verse? Brahmano hi pratishtaham. On me, the impersonal manifestation is based. So how are you going to monkey with that verse? Either overlook it or just try to... Well, when he says it's on him, he actually means it's on the impersonal. You see, aham, I, me, mom, me, that somehow that's impersonal. The Sanskrit's so clear. Not only in one place, but place after place after place in Bhagavad Gita. So that's why Srila Prabhupada presented Bhagavad Gita as it is. And he stated, as it is, because there were so many presentations of Bhagavad Gita that were as it is not. As we would like it to be. We would like it that we have free reign to have our pleasure pastimes, and Krishna has no pastimes. So therefore, as the Shastra says, Mayavadis fall down because the transcendental taste comes from hearing and discussing Krishna's activities. But if you think that ultimately we are all it, and it is us, and then you'll have to do your own so-called pastimes, which means you'll simply be embedded in material lust, pursuing your so-called pastimes, which are actually just a product of the modes of material nature. Some Krishna is lying on Kubja's bed. And Kubja, she has in her mind what should be the next step. She goes into her ensuite and bathes and puts on all sorts of fragrances and powders and I don't know what kind of stuff, perfumes, and dresses herself just for prime time. So you're thinking, wow, this is really sounding like Hollywood and Bollywood at its best. But remember, Ishwar Parama Krishna Satchidananda Vigraha. Krishna has the eternal body composed of knowledge and ananda, bliss, not composed of material ingredients. And Ishwar Parama, he's the supreme control. Everything is his energy. So Kubja had one thing in mind, and Krishna had another thing in mind. You have to keep that distinction. So Krishna was actually there to rid her of material lust. And Kubja, her program, she didn't know anything. She was a simple girl. He's the most attractive person I've ever seen. I'm a young girl. He cured my hunchback. So let me serve him the best way that I, as a teenage girl, knows how to do things. So she came. She entered the room where Krishna was. You know, Krishna's just reclined on the bed. And she approached Krishna. She's very shy because she'd never been around a man before. She was hunchback before, and you know, no one wants a hunchback girl. So she was very shy in approaching Krishna. And shy at the same time, flashing her eyes. So Krishna just made quick work of the situation, a quick play of the situation. It's Leela, it's not work, it's play. He just grabbed her hand, which was decorated with golden bangles, and pulled her to him. Wow. Yes. This is what we'd like to do. But Krishna is pulling her to his transcendental form of eternity, knowledge, and bliss. And she then embraces Krishna. And then what happens? Just by her smelling the fragrance of Krishna's feet, all her material desires are cleansed. So how are you going to imitate that? She's embracing Krishna tightly, and just by her smelling Krishna's lotus feet, all her material desires were cleansed. This is not a material affair. So then, what does she do? She's overwhelmed with gratitude, but she's simple. So she says to Krishna, "My dear Krishna, please stay in my inner chambers for 3 days. Everything we need is here, food and drink. You don't have to leave these rooms." In other words, she's saying, "Krishna, just let me be your only woman. Just enjoy with me and no other woman." So what does Krishna respond? How does he respond? He says, "Yes, but not now." And then he prepares to leave. So Trivikra Kubja is described at that point in the Bhagavatam as unfortunate because she expressed a material desire to Krishna. "Just stay here with me, let's enjoy materially." So she's unfortunate. But then again, she's fortunate because she is expressing her desires to Krishna. You know, the second canto of Bhagavatam says, "Akamo sava kamo va moksha kamo dadati Tivrena Bhakti Yogena Yajeta Purushottama. Whether you are free from all material desires, full of material desires, or you're lusty for liberation from material existence, you're hankering for moksha, never mind, just engage in bhakti with the intensity of a ray of sun, and Krishna will transform your desires. So that's what was happening with Tribhakra, with Gunja. Krishna had her in his program of desire transformation. She's thinking one thing, Krishna's thinking another thing. So when we hear that pastime, let's make sure we're thinking the right thing. So Krishna was, he wanted to encourage her, he was respectful. Okay, yes, I'll stay with you, but not now. And then he exited the house with Uddhava. Now, remember we discussed, why did Krishna bring Uddhava to the house with him, to Tribhakra's house? Krishna knew that Uddhava has such an upstanding reputation that people won't gossip that Krishna went to Tribhakra's house because Uddhava was there. They would think, oh, Krishna's brought such a saintly person, so everything is above board. Just see how Krishna carefully packaged the situation. So then he left with Uddhava. Now this situation about Tribhakra, about Kubja, is a little difficult to understand. It's the same as Arjuna's falling in illusion in the Battle of Kurukshetra, Bhagavad Gita. Actually, Arjuna is Krishna's eternal associate, but by the will of Krishna, Arjuna fell in illusion into the bodily concept of life. Govinda, I shall not fight. He put his bodily concerns first. That was by Krishna's arrangement, so that Krishna would have an opportunity to speak Bhagavad Gita. So, Kubja is actually the same. You have to look at her on two levels. On one level, she's an eternally liberated associate of Krishna. On another level, she's acting in a material way to show that we shouldn't approach Krishna with material desires. But even if we do, Krishna will transform them. But it's not the most intelligent thing to do at all. So Kubja's teaching that lesson. Well, actually, on another level, she's an eternally liberated associate of Krishna. Otherwise, how could she get so close to Krishna? So there's an instruction that is meant in this pastime in this leela. So that's why Tribhakra, Kubja, as she's also named, is used as an example of someone who approaches Krishna with lust. On one level that's so, on another level it's not so. She's teaching, just like Arjuna. On one level is an illusion, another level is not. These are pastimes of instruction. And of course, they're so nectarian to hear. And just by hearing about Krishna's pastimes in the association of devotees, we lose track of material existence. This is a mystery that can't be understood without the association of devotees. And we'll speak more about that tomorrow. The magic, or the mystery, the miracle of hearing about Krishna and understanding Krishna ignites in the association of bhakti yogis. Otherwise, it's very difficult to understand Krishna. So please start thinking how we can improve the quality of the association given in the Bhakti Yoga community. That's our never-ending task. The hospital's work is never done. But by trying to do that work on behalf of Krishna, you capture his attention. It's often like parenting. When the kids do good, the parents are all happy. When the kids are naughty and making mischief, the parents are. I was talking to, last year we had Yadubar and Rishaka here. And so I was talking to her oldest daughter, their oldest daughter, her husband. So they had a child, a young child, 3-year-old child, and the child had just kept them awake all night doing mischief. And when they finally dozed off to sleep, then they're awakened by the sounds of water running, and they wake up at 3 in the morning, and there's the 3-year-old child sitting in the kitchen sink because he wants to take a bath. Putting water all over him. And so, his young father, he was like, that was the last straw for him. He just, when he, after he finally got up in the morning, he just packed his suitcase and went to Dhruva. Remember Dhruva, the five temples? Went to Dhruva, the temple president, and said, I'm moving into the Brahmacharya ashram. And then he said to Dhruva and Parijata, because yeah, they're a household couple, they're chosen not to have children. So he said, why didn't I meet you before? No one told us. Of course, that was that day. Then the next day, the boy is nice and looking cute and adorable. So, you know, it's agony and ecstasy. So sometimes the association of devotees can be like that, you know. So we have to learn how to see it all in context. So we're always trying to make steps to improve that quality of sangha, of association. As this year, or this coming year, a few days of the new year, our goal is to strengthen the mentor program. And things, you know, go in cycles, just like Krishna says in the Gita, Sakalena Hamata. In the course of time, things run down, you have to bring them up again. That's the way it is in this world. So we want to strengthen the mentor system. In that way, make sure that every devotee has a chance to get inspiring guidance. We've explained many times how bhakti without guidance actually there's no such thing. Okay? All right, thank you very much. Hare Krishna.